opportunity to spend some time with you again today. And Brother Josh had just said to the college students who are in here, we started on doing some things in, yesterday on trying to kind of look at ourselves as staff members and not just education. How many education majors over here? Any education majors? Okay. A number of you. So there's a lot of education majors. Well, good. Well, then this will definitely fit in and hopefully will help you. I don't have the handouts. I could give you the handouts if I had them from yesterday on what we began with. We began talking about the importance of being a godly staff member, because if you're not, it doesn't matter how much you know, if you're not right in how you deal with one another and how you deal with the leadership and how and authority and things like that, then your education doesn't mean anything. You can have all the wealth of knowledge in the world, but you need to be right. You need to do things right. And so we talked a lot about that. I'll go over just a few of the things we talked about, so maybe just get you thinking here a little bit. Okay, let me see here. I'm going to see how much the teachers can remember of some things that I said yesterday, because one of the things that we talked about was listening and retention and being able to communicate properly. And we're gonna go over some games where we'll have some fun with that here in a little bit. But okay, let me see here. I said that we spend approximately how much of our time communicating with other people. Does anybody remember that? Becca, I saw your hand first. So, 70, very good. Okay, does anybody remember the breakdown of what that is without looking at your notes of how much time we spend on different things? Okay, think about this. You spend 70% of your time communicating with others. Now, this was I don't remember how long ago this was, but this is what they broke that down to. We spend about 9% of our time in writing. We spend about 16% of our time in reading. We spend about 30% of our time in talking, and I think that's probably low for most today. And then 45% of our time listening. I wish that we would spend that much time listening, but it seems like we spend much more time talking than we do listening. And then we talked about that there are some laws, some things about remembering and forgetting. And we forget how much of what we hear immediately? 50% of what we hear immediately. And then we forget how much of what we hear within 2 months. No. Somebody else? He wasn't listening. No. Nope, not 40. We forget 50% of what we hear immediately. We forget 75% of what we hear within 2 months. Within 2 months of when you take something in, you've forgotten 75% of what you did remember. Okay. Of the other 25% that we do remember, only 60% is correct. See what I mean by that? Because we add things in that never were said or took place in the beginning. We change the story. And we think we remember what we had said or what we had done, but we forget so easily. And then I gave a little game, and we're going to go through it. We're going to go through the game again today, where you may know it as I believe Ms. Stumpfel called it the telephone, where you relay to an individual, and they relay to the next individual, and they relay to the next individual, and they relay to the next individual, and then the last individual has to say what the first person had said to the first individual. And we find out that it's hard to grasp, it's hard to take in, it's hard to take hold of everything that's said and remember it, and especially in a short time span. And the reason that you say, well, why are you doing these things? Because communication is the key to education. You can't, if you don't, it's not just dispensing of information, but it's also receiving of it. And by us practically going through it ourselves, it helps us to be able to understand more about what those that we're trying to teach are dealing with. You see, because we seem to forget how it was when we were young. We seem to forget. Now, you college students aren't yet, but we forget very rapidly how difficult it can be. I said the average person speaks at the rate of 150 words a minute. But the problem is we hear at the rate of 1,000 words per minute. So we average 150 words per minute, but we hear it 1,000 words per minute. And so the question is, what are we doing with that extra time? What do we do with the extra time in this communication thing? Most of us think about other things rather than what the other person is saying. I was just teasing Mrs. Allen. Is she in here? She's not in here, so I can talk about her. I was just teasing Mrs. Allen because I was trying to, she came over and asked me a question, and she's in the radio room. And she was trying to get the titles and all that, and I was trying to communicate the information to her, but somebody else was talking over here, and she turned and started listening to what they were talking while I was trying to talk with her. And we just talked about this yesterday, about how it is that when we're communicating or trying to communicate, oftentimes when we're the listener, we're only listening to part of what's being said, or we're already formulating things about what we're going to respond, how we're going to respond. We need to stop thinking about how we're going to respond, because when we do, we lose concentration. And of course, I made fun of her right there with preacher and all that, and said, she didn't listen yesterday to what I was trying to say. We need to stop interrupting when somebody's trying to talk to us or trying to finish the other person's sentence, because this takes our concentration completely away from what the other person is saying, and it focuses the attention back on ourselves, like what we're thinking of is more important. And again, that's all of that is really just selfishness and pride, because we're thinking about ourselves rather than thinking about the one who's trying to communicate to us. I shared this little tidbit: effective communication. And the effective communication model, the sender, the one speaking, sends the message. The receiver hears the message and responds. And then the sender clarifies what was said, and the receiver confirms it. So that is effective communication when it's going back and forth at least twice. Then you understand what's happening, what's taking place. We don't seem to have that much anymore. And it seems like I told on myself yesterday, too. I said, I was telling Brother Josh that I just 2 or 3 days ago, somebody was talking to me. I believe it was my son was talking with me, and he was trying to tell me something. And he was kind of asking some advice, but telling me something. And he got through just a little portion of what he was saying. And right away, my mind began to run to what I was going to answer him on that. And I never heard the last part of what he said. But the last part of what he said was important also. So just trying to get down this listening and communicating and responding, that's what we talked about yesterday in the second half of that period there. And by the way, you think about it in this respect. How many times college students, have your parents been trying to instruct you, tell you something to do, and you're listening to what they're saying, but you get the first part of it because they want you to do this, and you got that down, but you begin to think about what that is that you have to get done, and then they say something else that they want done, but you miss that totally. And so then when they come back to you and they say, well, why didn't you do this? I did what you told me to do. I did this and I did this, but that wasn't everything that I said. I said I wanted you to do this too. And what is it? It's our problem in listening, our problem in being able to retain. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that in the second part of the lesson today. But I want to give you a handout now, and we're going to talk a little bit about just a simple little thought on good teachers. So I like giving handouts. You can grab one and pass it back, pass it on down, grab one and pass it on back. I'll wait till y'all get it, possess it in your hands. Paul said, the things that thou hast learned of me, I'm going to misquote it now. It's from 1 Timothy. The same commit thou to faithful men who should be able to teach others also. What are you saying? We're supposed to be passing down. We're supposed to be handing down the things that we learn and to other people. committing them to other people. Why? So that they can pass them down also. And I, of course, I didn't write the verse down, so I don't have it here. But the things that we're learning today, and the things that you're learning today, college students, you're learning for a purpose and for a reason. Why? So that you can pass them on down to others that will be able to teach and to help other people also. So once you get those, you can bring the leftovers up to me if you would. Much. Okay, these are just some thoughts on being a good teacher. Let me grab my. Okay, the first one is simply this: good teachers help to make education enjoyable because good teachers enjoy teaching. It's difficult to be a teacher when you don't enjoy what you're doing. How many of you have had a teacher that you know did not enjoy what they were doing? Raise your hand. And the truth of the matter is, you and I both know that the children pick up on it, and young people pick up on it like that. They know when you don't enjoy what you're doing. They know when it's a drudgery, when they know it's a... If you're going to be a good teacher, you need to enjoy the thing that you're doing and make it enjoyable for the young people. Well, how can I do that? Well, just some things that help to do that are, first of all, your attitude and your spirit and how you present yourself to your class. But the use of visual aids. Visual aids are very vital in trying to communicate the things that we're trying to communicate with young people or in teaching at any level, really. I taught for a little while in the fire department on different things and even in the medical. I did some of the CPR and first aid and things, and I would get people up, and I'd use illustrations and make things visual. And the more you make things visual, the more people seem to be able to retain. Think of that model of trying to how am I best going to retain? The more you hear, the more you can. That's why I have you writing down. The more you write down what you hear, the more you see. All those things help you to retain those things better. And thus, that's so that we can be the teacher that we ought to be. I remember a teacher that I had in high school, and he was history teacher and in a public school in Michigan. And his name was Mr. Peacock. But Mr. Peacock was probably my favorite teacher all the way through school. And it was because he made everything... He brought everything to life, even the history. Everything he taught about history, he'd bring visuals in. He would act out things. He would dress up, as in what he was teaching, the era that he was teaching. He would, everything, you could tell he loved what he was doing. He presented those things in a fashion that you could remember. And I can remember those things. And something that you don't soon forget. That's what helps make a good teacher. Good teachers help to make education enjoyable. Because good teachers enjoy teaching. Now, one thing that I don't have on this list here, but I you can just scribble it at the top, and I just failed to put it down, and I ran out of space. So it probably should be at the very top. Good teachers are on time. Good teachers are on time. And I had a preacher that I was under for a number of years when I first got out of the military. It was my wife's pastor and where she grew up. And this was his statement. And I don't know, it may have been attributed to somebody else, but he's the one I first heard it from. And it is so true. He said, to be early is to be on time. To be on time is to be late. To be early is to be on time. To be on time is to be late. I mean, if you're slipping in at the last moment and you get in at exactly, if you're supposed to be, what time are you supposed to start class? 8:30. And you slip in at 8:29 and 59 seconds. That's not good for the class. You ought to be in the class. You ought to be there greeting people. You ought to be. That helps make good teachers. Okay, number two on your list there is good teaching begins with thorough planning and preparation. Thorough planning and preparation. I know I'm going to pick on my daughter, okay? Rebecca is in here. She's going to be teaching third and fourth grade this year, and she's excited about it. I know for the last 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, she has been consumed in trying to make that room just exactly how she wants it to be, so that it will bring forth a good spirit, a good presentation to the young people when they come in and everything. But that's the way we ought to be with everything that we do in our teaching. We ought to be thorough in our planning and our preparation for it. The thoughts, some of the things that I've been teaching here just these 2 days here, things that I've jotted down and gone over for the last couple months, just thinking about coming in here to do this and trying to get my mind in gear, because this is a valuable time. I mean, this time is the one commodity we have that is most valuable to us. We all have the same amount of time in a day, what are we doing with that time that we're given? So this is an important time. It's an important time that you have with those young people. As you teach, you have a certain amount of hours in the day, and you're trying to get across a certain amount of information. Hey, be thorough in your planning and your preparation for your classroom. It's and by the way, the young people pick up on that too. Young people know for sure when you have not been preparing or been planning. And these college students, too, know when we've not been prepared or planned right. So number three, good teachers are good with instructions and expectations. Good teachers are good with instructions and expectations. How many of you have had a teacher that just seemed like they perpetually would throw quizzes at you and things without ever telling you, and they'd say, but I told you last week, or I told you that this was going to happen, or I told you that, and everybody in the class knows they never said a thing about it. Well, it's probably because the teacher was not good at giving the instructions and the expectations to young people. How many of you have had somebody that all of a sudden at the end of the semester or toward the end of the semester, okay, that 20-page report is due next week? And you're like, whoa, what? 20-page report? What are you laughing about, Enoch? It's due next week. But wait a minute, you never said anything about that. Well, we talked about it at the very beginning. Well, maybe in the beginning, the very first week, you said something about it. Then you say nothing about it throughout the rest of the time. And this is the mentality that sometimes teachers take on. Well, I told them once. They should know it. That's not good teaching. No, you need to keep them. You need to keep instructions and expectations thorough. You need to. By the way, if you are the expectations that you have for your students for this year, you ought to be thorough with that from the very beginning. The very beginning of the class, the very beginning of your teaching time, you ought to let them know what your expectations are and the things that you are going to expect them to be accomplished by the end of the semester. So, good instructions, good expectation, and giving them the expectations that you're looking for. Number four, this kind of goes along with it, but good teachers have clear goals and objectives for themselves and their students. Clear goals and objectives. Can somebody tell me what a goal is? What's a goal?
Something you're trying to accomplish.
Something you're trying to accomplish. Well, Ian, what was you going to say? To accomplish something. A goal is something that you set. It's a mark that you set. It's something that you're trying to accomplish. What is an objective? Somebody tell me what an objective is. Michael, you're always like, I don't know if I can answer this or not. Okay, what?
Plans to reach that goal.
Plans to reach the goal. That's exactly what it is. So your goal, you ought to have clear goals and objectives for yourself and for your students. Okay, what am I going to accomplish this semester? What am I trying to accomplish? And you don't You don't have to give everything out to your students as you go. Your goal and what you're trying to get them to accomplish, maybe you just give them the big objectives as you go along. But you've got it clear in your mind what you're trying to accomplish and what you're trying to get done. And help them to be able to understand each step of the process of what you're trying to do in the teaching process. So clear goals and objectives for yourself as well as the student helps to make you a good teacher. And again, every one of these things the students pick up on. They know when you're not prepared. And how many of you, let me ask this question, okay. How many of you can go back in your mind's eye, like I said, and say, boy, there was a teacher that I had that was so good that they just really, you knew that they were prepared. They made it fun. They made it. How many of you are like that? You have somebody like that? Most of us do. How many of you say, boy, I've got some teachers that I look back and I think, man, I don't know why they were teaching the class, because they didn't seem like, yeah, just about as many hands go up on that, too. Why? We pick up on that. Hey, we're not dumb. And young people pick up on that. And college-age young people pick up on that also. So, clear goals, objectives for yourselves and your students. Okay. Number five, good teachers are good students. Good teachers are good students. The Bible says, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. 2 Timothy 2:15. What are you saying? I'm saying we need to be studying continually. Here's one of the fallacies of college. Here's one of the fallacies of young people today. We think, man, I'm so excited about, I'm glad I'm here at college and everything, but I'm so excited about getting done with college. Because when I get done with college, I don't have to go to school anymore and I don't have to. Not hardly. Guess what? You got to learn. You got to study. You got all of your life. When I got out of high school, I joined the military right away. Went in the military. I thought, well, I'll go in the military and I won't have to worry about that there. They gave us a book about that thick. And for the Navy, it was called the Blue Jackets Manual. And we were supposed to begin to memorize that book. We had to know all the different things in that book that book contained. We had to go through like little testings where we would have to answer questions and everything. But I'm thinking, wait a minute, I'm out of school now. Why do I got to go through this? Why do I gotta... Hey, we need to be continually trying to study, trying to make ourselves better, trying to be the best at what we can be. As a teacher in whatever class you're doing, whatever, you ought to be studying about that. What can I do to make myself better, being a better student? And again, we would have to learn those things. We'd have to go through those things. Hey, I got out of the military and I thought, man, phew, glad that's done now. I went in the fire department. Well, no more schooling for me. Yeah, right. Every day. We worked 24-hour shifts. But as long as it was any Monday through Friday, when we were on duty, Monday through Friday, we always had training. Every morning and every afternoon. We had classroom training that we had to go through. We had practical training that we had to go through. But every day we had training. Every day we... Why? So that we could be better at what we were trying to do or trying to accomplish. And listen, if you're going to be a good teacher, you got to be a good student too. You got to study. And study the things. Study your materials. Study your... Again, and this is kind of getting ahead, but man, young people know when you're prepared and not prepared to teach the material that you have for them. The next one is similar, but good teachers are good learners. Good teachers are good learners. You say, what do you mean by that? Well, part of the communication process is dispensing information, but the one that you're dispensing it to learns it, or they receive it, and they get it unto themselves. Good teachers are good learners. You're trying to gain information. You're trying to learn more. You're trying to gather more. I think one of the best models of that, and I said this yesterday, but I think one of the best models of that is our pastor. I mean, he's always trying to learn. I've said this to pastors around the country that I've been around. Some pastors will say, man, I've heard about your preacher, and you know, I heard he's a great guy and everything. I said, he is. And I said, you know, one of the things about him, he's a very wise man. And for his age, he's extremely wise. Well, why is that? Because he's always trying to learn. You know, when I first met him, years ago, I was preaching at Cedar River Baptist Camp, and with Brother Angel up there. And And the first time that I met Pastor Hanks, and he asked me about if I could come and preach a revival. And so I said, sure, I'd be glad to. And he scheduled me for the revival. And it was the first time I ever came here to the church. But when I got here for that meeting, every day, when he would take me to lunch or what, he would be continually asking questions. You mean what kind of questions? About different things, about things that I have to deal with, about different situations, that how I would handle this or how I would handle that. Why? Because he was trying to gather more information. He's trying to get more learning, trying to be better at what he was doing himself. That's the way we should be if we're going to be good teachers. We need to not only be good students, but we need to be good learners also. Number 7 is good teachers are continually striving. Again, this kind of goes along with it, to learn themselves and know their subject matter better. I know I've already alluded to that in the previous, but are you striving to know your subject matter better? Okay, how many of you have that one subject? Why are you laughing already? How many of you have that one subject that you say, man, I wish I would never have to go through this again? Yeah, I wish I... And some of you are having to teach that subject this year. What are you saying? I'm saying, hey, if you're going to be a good teacher, you need to continually strive to learn and to know your subject matter better. When I went into high school, math was not one of my favorite subjects. And matter of fact, in my freshman year, geometry. Yuck. Geometry. And all the theories and hypotheses, all the different things that you had to come up with, I passed by the skin of my teeth. I got a D. And but, it was a required class. And then I knew that in 11th grade was required that we take algebra. So I knew that I was going to have to, hey, if you took 3 hours, you could major in it. So I knew I was going to have to take 2 hours of it. And I thought, you know what, I just need to knuckle down and go ahead and take another class and take another math class so that I can get one of that as one of my majors. And I did. And you know what, I really enjoy math. I really do. I enjoy numbers. You can ask my wife, you can ask my family, they can shoot numbers at me, and man, I can add them up in my head. Number after number after number after number. I don't have to have a pencil calculator and all that. It just, why? Well, because I just stayed at it, and just, even though I didn't necessarily care for it so much when I began with it, but I kept at it and kept at it. And boy, the more you strive to learn and to know, the better off you're going to end up being. So those subjects that really you struggle with, strive to know more about them. Strive to know more about them. Okay, number 8. Good teachers not only give of their time, but of themselves. There's a difference. There's a difference between giving of your time and giving of yourself. Giving of your time is, okay, I've got an eight-hour day, or a 9-hour day or whatever, and I've got to fill this time frame, and I'll do what I can do during that time frame. But giving of yourselves takes it a little bit further than that. Why? That's looking to the people. That's looking to students that maybe have a greater need, and being willing to give of yourself to try to help them to attain to what they need to attain to accomplish what you've set out, the goals that you've set out for your class, what you want to see accomplished. I was the vice president of a Grace Baptist College for a couple of years. And I've told people, it amazes me, and not bad teachers, but it amazes me that some of the teachers' mentality coming in there with the college students. And so I'm on your side right now on what I'm saying here, okay? The mentality coming in, you know what? Some of them, just this old school mentality or whatever. You know what? When I was a student, they gave us the information and that was it. And they ought to learn it. And they ought to be able to get it. And they ought to be able to. I said, wait a minute. he says that my job, this guy said, my job is just to give them the information. It's up to them to be able to get a hold of it. Hey, they better take good notes. They better, you know, on and on and on. And I said, now, wait a minute. Just by dispensing that information doesn't mean they're learning anything. Well, then that's on them. And that's poor teaching. That's poor teaching. What do you mean? We're not only supposed to just give of our time, but we're supposed to give of ourselves to. Well, our job as a teacher is to try to help somebody that's at one level, bring them up to another level. Each step as you go through the education process from year to year to year, you're trying to bring them up to another level. You're trying to bring them up. And sometimes you got to go back and kind of pick them up and help them a little bit. We talked about this yesterday, but sometimes if you get a bad teacher, sometimes you get a student that gets passed, but they come into your grade and you think, wow, they shouldn't be here. Well, if that can't be changed, then guess what? It's your responsibility to try to give of yourself to bring them up to where they need to be. So that they can get through, so they can catch up, so they can get to the place. You say, well, that's a lot of responsibility put on me. Well, welcome to being a teacher. That's what we're supposed to be doing. So good teachers not only give of their time, but of themselves. Can somebody give me a check on the time? So I just know where I'm at. What is it? 10:36. Okay. Let me see here. Number 9. Good teachers don't set their students up to fail. I was waiting for an amen out of college. But challenge their abilities. Oh my goodness, I could say a lot on this. Good teachers don't set their students up to fail, but challenge their abilities. Every student can do better than what they're doing. Every student, you try to help them challenge the abilities that they have, but don't set them up to fail. We had a guy, we had a teacher in college he gave his students. Now listen, the students at the college, I don't know how many hours you're taking a day, but I mean, they were taking 18 credit hours. They wanted to get through. And this one teacher gave his one class, it was a class on the life of Christ, and he gave him a book written by a man named Edersheim. And the book was over 1,000 pages. It was almost 1,200 pages long. And every week they had to read, you know, 100, 150 pages. And they had to write a 25-page report at the end of the semester. And they had to have these summaries every week. And I sat him down and talked to him. I said, do you understand that they're taking other classes? Do you understand that they have other things that they have to do also? You got to take into account the whole picture. As a college student, and to help teachers that are at a college level, you got to understand that there are teachers that are putting a weight of information or a weight of what they expectation to get some things done. But when you just throw something huge like that, all you're doing is setting them up to fail. Because here's what ended up happening. This is what ended up happening. I'm going to get some Snickers out of college students now. Here's what ended up happening is the young people would try to find somebody that was a fast reader that would read through and write a summary for them, and then they'd rewrite it in their own way. Why are you laughing, Michael? And or they would just try to skim read it, you know, read a page here, a page there, a page there, a page there, and then try to write a little thing on that, and they would lie about saying that they read it. And you say, well, that's their fault that they would lie about that. Well, no, it might be your fault that you gave unreasonable expectations and you threw things on them that were setting them up to fail rather than just challenge their abilities. So, things to think about. The next one kind of goes along with it. Number 10 is good teachers realize that they are servants, not taskmasters. We're supposed to be a servant to the people that we're trying to teach. We're supposed to serve them and help them along and teach them and train them and show them the way that they're supposed to go. We're not supposed to be lording over them. We're not supposed to be dictating and being dictators. Now, we need to control our class. We'll get that in just a second. We need to do those things. But as far as what we're doing with them, hey, we're servants to them. Every teacher that's a good teacher realizes they're a servant to their students. They're trying to help them. Number 11, good teachers care not only about their students and their future, but their parents also. Pray and know the family. Know their needs. We covered this a little bit yesterday at college. I had all the teachers write down, begin writing down everything that they knew about their students that are coming into their class. Why'd you have them do that? To get them to see how much they know and how much they don't know. And it's good to learn more, to find out more about the student, to find out more about their family, to know more about them. Why? Because it will maybe help you to understand why they're struggling in an area here, an area there, what's going on. And it'll help you to be a better teacher to them also. Again, I challenge them with a prayer list. Every teacher ought to have a prayer list. You ought to have that prayer list. You ought to pray over your students. It ought to be a daily thing. And you ought to be praying about the needs of that family also. Number 12. Good teachers are good at drawing out the potential of their students. It kind of goes back to something I said earlier about how that, you know, you can just throw information out there and you can just give it and you can just say, well, I expect you to do this, right? But if you're going to be a good teacher, you're going to be good at drawing out the potential that your students have. There's a lot of potential locked up in young people. There's a whole lot of potential. But you got to, sometimes you just got to tap in and draw it out. You got to spend a little bit more, give a little bit more of yourself to be able to get that out of them. You realize that they're in the same boat that you were in years ago, and just they need help. They need help, and that's what you're there for. That's what your job as a teacher is. Number 13, good teachers are good listeners. Listen. Listen, listen, listen to your students. Listen to what they're saying. Listen, trying to keep track of it. This will help you in classroom and help you with controlling classroom also. Being a good listener. Listen to what's going on. Listen, hey, you may find out something just by simply listening and overhearing something that some young people are talking about in a bad situation in their home or something like that. Something that you could pray for. Something that you could intervene on their behalf, intercede on their behalf. Good teachers are good listeners. And by the way, you're good listeners to those that are in authority over you as they try to instruct you and try to teach you and try to help you and try to give you instructions to follow. You're good at listening to it. That's why I spent a little bit of time with this communication and listening drills, and we're going to do it again here in a few moments just to get you to stop and think about how important it is. Also, not only are good teachers good listeners, but good teachers are good communicators. You can communicate the truth in a way that's easily received, that can help the young people to be able to understand. Well, here's one that's going to blow some people out of the water, but oh well. Number 15, good teachers are good organizers. Oh, a lot of moaning and groaning going on here. Good teachers are good organizers. They don't just look for ways to fill time, but maximize it. Good teachers are good organizers. They don't just look for ways to fill time, but maximize time. And not just saying, well, how can I fill up this time slot or what can I do here? No, you're trying to get the most out of that, out of the time that you do have. I believe that a good teacher will at the end of the day realize that they weren't able to accomplish everything that they were trying to accomplish or get accomplished. But you got across information and it was received and it was understood. But you still had more that you could do. You shouldn't get to what time does school end? 3 o'clock? Okay. You shouldn't get to 2:30 or 2:40 and say, well, I don't have anything else to do. No, you should have enough. You ought to be prepared enough. You ought to be organized enough that you have something else to put into that time slot. And then number 16, good teachers are good at observing and controlling the classroom setting. the attitude and temperature of the class. Good teachers are good at observing and controlling the classroom setting, the attitude and temperature of the class. And I'm not talking about the temperature, which raise and lower your heating and cooling. And I'm talking about the temperature of the classroom, the attitude, the what's going on there. It amazes me the amount of the lack of control in many Christian schools and in many Christian school classrooms. I'm going to pick on our classrooms back in where we came from at Grace. Some teachers, I'm not saying everything, but some teachers had no control over their classrooms. Rebecca can tell you the names of the ones that she was in that had no control over the classroom. Let me tell you something, it's a bad thing. You see, not only does it hurt that the student that's acting up, but it hurts everybody else also. And if you don't have control over that classroom, and if you don't have the temperature and attitude of that classroom in a right perspective, it's gonna detract from the education process. If there's an unruly, uncontrollable student, then it needs to be dealt with at a higher level. But you don't just continually put time in the classroom on one student and take away or detract from all the rest of the students. Or you don't let one student or two students control the classroom and the atmosphere, the attitude and everything. You've got to control that. You're the leader. And if the kids are just totally and completely unruly and just can't, then they need to be taken out. And they need to be dealt with in another way and then brought back in. Because if it's a continual thing, and I've known classrooms where it's a continual thing, day after day after day after day. Do you know what that breeds? People don't want to come to class. The other students don't want to come to class because they know what's happening. They know what's going on. They know what they're going to have to deal with. Man, it ought to be an atmosphere and an attitude where the young people want to be there and they want to come. So you have to control that. You're the leader. You've got to control that situation. And if it's, again, beyond you, and it may be a thing where the young people are just totally unruly, and if that's so, then they need to be taken out. The pastor needs to deal with it, or Brother Daniels needs to deal with them and deal with the family or whatever and help that situation. But you're not going to help the situation by just letting it go. You say, well, I really want them to be in there. I want to help them. You're not helping them if you foster bad manners and bad attitudes and everything. Keep control of the classroom. And then 17, good teachers seek to advance the cause of their leaders. Good teachers seek to advance the cause of their leaders. I mentioned this yesterday and talked with, when I was talking to the teachers yesterday about how important it is that you realize that your job is to advance the cause of the one that is the leader. The pastor is the one who God gave the burden to start the Christian school. He's the one responsible for it. He's the one. So your job is to try to advance the cause of what he's trying to accomplish, what there's trying to be done. When I was in the college, as the vice president of the college, I tried to run the college the way I felt Dr. Jenkins wanted it ran. Why? Because it wasn't my college, and it wasn't, God didn't put it on my heart. It wasn't birthed in my heart. It was birthed in Brother Jenkins' heart, just like this Christian school. It wasn't birthed in your heart. It was birthed in Brother Hank's heart. And so what we're trying to do is trying to advance the cause of what the Lord has placed on his heart, trying to keep his arms lifted up, trying to help him to be able to be the pastor that he's trying to be to the people that God's given to him. So understand and realize that. I've known people, educators, that have gone to the degree where they feel in their mind that their class is theirs and they should be able to do whatever they want to do, and they do things that are contrary to what the preacher would want, or there's crazy things can happen when that happens. Let me give you another story. It may be it's a little bit different, but you'll understand what I'm trying to say. When we were up at Grace, bus routes. We had 13 bus routes at one time. And of those 13 bus routes, I mean, a lot of people, sometimes it's easy to begin to believe, well, this bus route's mine. These are my kids. I can do what I want to do with them. I can. One of the bus captains, who is really a very good bus captain, and he really doesn't, he's not the kind of guy that was trying to usurp authority from preacher or anything. He's trying to, oh, I'm going to be a blessing to the kids, and I'm going to take them down. We're going to have a little picnic by the water. I'm going to let them wade in the water by the Otsego Lake, which is right there. And if they want to wade in the water some and things, well, he allowed them to do that. And when they got them back on the bus, they realized there was one kid not there. And they began to search for this one child, 6 years of age. They searched the water. They hollered out to other people. They were in a secluded area, but they hollered for some other people. And other people came over, searched, couldn't find. All of a sudden, they saw a body floating. I lost a six-year-old child off a bus route. Because a guy did something, and not a bad guy or anything, but there's no way that the church would have approved of what he did. And the church had to go through this big lawsuit. The lawsuit was nothing compared to the loss of a life. Well, you're saying that's a pretty drastic extreme. But when you think that your class is more important to you than it is to the big picture, then you got problems. And it can create bigger problems. So always remember, good teachers seek to advance the cause of their leader. All right, let's have a little word of prayer and then we'll have a break. Father, thank you for the opportunity to be here today and, Lord, to be able to speak with these prospective teachers and teachers and the college students. And Lord, I pray that you'd help us to understand how important it is that we do whatever job that you've given us to the best of our ability in a way that would honor and glorify you, that would help the big picture, that would advance the cause of this church and whatever church that these college students will be going to. And Lord, help us to be striving to be the best we can be when it comes to doing the work that you've given us to do. I pray that you'd bless this next hour also in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. What time is it, Brother Ben?